two MLU insiders.
There aren't many players like Alan Colvin.
Bringing you hard analysis of everything that happens on the field.
Nobody goes out and burns Morgan Ebert. Nobody goes out and makes him look silly.
This is the John and Greg Show.
It's John Phillips here with a special conference playoff edition of the John and Greg Show here with Greg Fallon.
How are you doing today, John?
Doing great. Looking forward to this championship game that seems closer than it actually is. We got a few weeks.
Yeah, we got to fill some time on the show with that. And we'll start this week with recapping an exciting playoff weekend with a couple of close games. One we did not expect, and one we kind of did expect to be close. Two very different games also, John.
Oh, vastly different, but both were enjoyable. It made for a good night of Ultimate, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Which was good. So, and then we'll be giving out some awards.
The John and Greg Show Awards, which are separate awards from the actual MLU Awards. And I believe we've decided, John, that we will actually give out a physical award for these awards.
Right.
A little plaque will be showing up either in person. We'll deliver it to the players who've won the awards who are in the championship game, which is a few, spoiler alert. And we'll be sending an award to the players who are not at the championship game.
Right, which is something that I'm excited about. And, you know, it's something that, you know, gives a little pat on the back at the end of the season. And it's one of those things that in a lot of sports you see awards come from different areas. So our criteria for X award may be different than the league's.
Yes.
And otherwise.
And also, we don't get to, you know, nobody else is voting on these except us.
Right.
So I like having autonomy over my own awards. This is fun.
Yeah, we literally just sat down and talked about it. We're like, oh, okay.
So nobody else's awards, nobody else's votes can screw up my picks.
Whereas with the league awards, who knows?
Oh, yeah.
It's a crapshoot. So let's get into it.
Let's start in the East.
Yeah.
Let's start with the game that occurred first.
Right. So out East. Out East. It's interesting. If we were on the West
out
Coast.
Out East. No, it's here East, I think. Is out. It's out West. It's here East.
Catholic University. We expected Boston to come out and slag a little bit, not have as much energy. But both teams, you know, were evenly matched. It was punch for punch, which is something that was surprising.
I'd say, John, that I got what I expected from Boston in the beginning of the game. I didn't get what I expected from DC. They looked sloppy. They looked nervous. There were definitely nerves on both sides. But the DC guys in that first half just looked like they were crumbling under the pressure of being the favorite. And Boston was just picking up the scraps.
I think Alan Colick said it best when he said, you know, we had to actually, you know, go out and play rather than just try and protect something. You know, they weren't used to playing as the favorites.
And also Alan Colick just controlled the game in the second half, and it was a joy to watch. I remember right before his run through D that really, really kicked the momentum going in DC's direction in the second half, I turned to our graphics guy and said, hey, Connor, watch Alan Colick do something crazy. And not 15 seconds later, he gets a run through D and then gets the bookends on the other end. And I was like, I looked at him, he's like, how'd you know? Like, because it's Alan Colick.
It's the kind of year that he's had. It's interesting, either Saturday morning or whenever I was making the graphic up, I was comparing, you know, the big three of both Boston and DC. So Colick, Schaffner, and Pryle versus Marquette, Malachek, and Graham. And the numbers were...
Don't forget about Danny Clark.
Oh, no, not at all. But, like, when comparing, like, the top three points getters from both teams, you know, the numbers were actually fairly consistent for both groups, which was interesting. But the big difference this year has been how clutch DC, you know, the guys at top have been. So Colick and Schaffner, they combined for 13 points on the night. Schaffner, going against the, you know, what his typical grain is, which was an 86% completion percentage for the year, he completed, I believe, all of his passes on the night.
He played great. He and Colick were outstanding.
They were both great. And then Pryle comes up with what might be the biggest play that he's made.
He rips the heart out of Boston again. The same score, John, by the way. Same exact score.
Right.
As the first time these teams faced off at Cardinal Stadium.
you know, it was one of those things that you knew that the interesting thing about the timed game is that a minute is a lot of time, and if you play it right and you make a big play in that last minute, generally you're going to end up being able to walk away with the game. And Pryl in the end zone with a huge catch, that's exactly what he did.
I don't know how he even made the catch in that crowd, but you saw him there and you saw him body up that guy, and you knew it. You knew he was going to find a way to make the play, because that's the type of year he's had, that's the type of player he is. That's the type of year that DC has had, and frankly, it's the type of year that Boston has had.
Yeah, because Boston, we had, you know, Tim Brubaker on our show, and he said that it was funny that Boston plays, you know, better when they lose, but what that was really speaking to is, you know, Boston's a consistent team. It's just they have not won games the way that they did last year.
They were bad in close games this year. They were bad when people decided not to let them roll over them. When teams didn't, you know, defeat themselves, Boston had trouble. And as a consequence, they finished under 500 if you count the playoff game this year.
And you see, you know, Kolek has just put this team, whenever he wants to, he just lifts them up and essentially carries them to victory. He is the biggest spark plug in the league, hands down.
Absolutely. And his play just makes Schaffner better. We were talking about this on the way to our men's league game the other night, that Schaffner very well may be the second best handler in the East, but he gets no love because he plays with the best handler and the best cutter. So people are never talking about him, even though everybody recognizes he's a great player and sees what he does. You know, he's not the guy who gets all the accolades. He doesn't get his face on the, you know, the cover of the website every week. That goes to Allen and Peter generally. But this guy is outstanding, and Kolek and Schaffner are one of the only handler pairs in the league that actually make each other better. They complement each other so perfectly, and they play so well together. They're deadly, and there's no way to defend them. And they both can move. They can both play downfield. They can both throw deep, and they just do so many things well. And you know, Schaffner has a bigger cannon. He's more of the deep throwing threat, and Allen's more of the works more of the unders and the dishy throws and the you know, the throw and go that, you know, we love to watch so much. And they're incredible. And the other thing I want to say about this game, John, is that run by the DC defense coming out of halftime was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. That was exactly what they needed to do. And it sent Boston reeling, and it sent them just, you knew when they took the lead they were not going to lose the game.
DC's D-line is really interesting because there's no, you know, one guy. They have just a line of guys who just walk out there, and all of them play so well as a unit.
Dorico Johnson, Dom Gibson, David Cranston, they all came up with big plays. Dan Cantor, they were all there when they needed to make plays. That Dorico Johnson D was unbelievable. And they, you know, hats off to, that's a whole team that decided we're not losing today. When they got down, they made their mistakes. And when they cut in the second half, they were so open. They were so open. It's truly just awesome to watch their offense run and their team play.
They're at the top of this league, you know, far and away. There's no one even close in terms of the total package. This team on offense, when they get going, they're impossible to stop.
And they believe from the top down, from the GM to the coach to the players to the guys who don't even, the practice players to inactives, everybody believes in one goal. And they have two guys at the top, four guys at the top actually, that are really, really just the captains of this ship that are leading this charge on the field. Kolek, Schaffner, Pryl, and I want to mention Kevin Moldenhauer, because he's done an outstanding job coaching this team this year, developing this system.
Yeah, the system is what is winning them games. It's what's made them the best team in the league. And I think, you know, early favorites to win the MLU championship, I would think.
Let's not get into that too much yet, but I would tend to agree with you.
They're just reeling on all cylinders.
And they earned every bit of it, you can tell. And the last thing I want to mention about the game, when they went on that run and they tied the game, on that Chip Cobb goal. Chip Cobb is one of my favorite players in the MLU.
Yep.
I loved watching him this year, and he's improved so much from his game last year. He's a legitimate defensive impact player for them now. And to see the energy on his face when he scored that goal and just the intensity of the DC fans, the DC team, it was all embodied in that one fist pump from Chip Cobb. And I saw him after the game. He was, you know, huddled up against, like, on his, almost on his knees, like crouched in a, like a squat position, I guess, just overcome with emotion. And you know, that's, I love watching him play, and I love watching how energized he gets and how much it means for him to, how much it means to him to get to the championship and for that whole team. I think it embodies the way that team has played this year. And, you know, they're a fun team to root for because those guys just work their butts off. And you can tell that they really, really, really wanted to get here.
It's not a surprise. You know, sometimes these things, they all make sense that, you know, Jake, who put together Ultimate Pro, the short documentary on the DC Current, you know, it's not a mistake that he was down in DC and that it was that team that he was following, because Chip Cobb, in that, he became, you know, a central focus, because what he said about being, you know, a pro Frisbee player, what that meant to him, it's shown through this entire season.
And he's had a great year. And that team, they've had a real storybook season. And, you know, a lot of those guys we know are, you know, on their last run together. This is probably the last time we'll see this whole team play together. We know Sean Keegan is moving. Dan Cantor is moving. So you're unlikely to see the same team come back next year. You're going to lose some key figures. But boy, is it a storybook season, and boy, have they been fun to watch. This is good. This is a team that, if they win the championship, is going to go down. You know, as long as this league goes, this is going to be one of the best stories and the best teams. You know, they talk about like the 85 Bears and like legendary NFL teams. This will be a legendary MLU team,
for sure,
provided they win the championship.
Yeah, that's kind of the kicker. So from one storybook season to the way that I saw this Vancouver-Portland matchup out west was, you know, Portland in a lot of ways was a Cinderella story. This is a team that was 1-9 last year, had so much talent, but just didn't know how to put it all together. Right. And then suddenly this team is 8-2 and playing incredibly well. Whereas Vancouver, statistically phenomenal season.
Is a different kind of storybook turnaround for them. This team was only 3-7 last year. They weren't very good, and they were starting to look like they were going on that same path this year. And they made a midseason turnaround that is nothing short of incredible. The way that they kind of picked themselves up, dusted themselves off, and said, "We're going to go beat some teams. We're going to get ourselves into the playoffs." And they didn't really sneak in, but they got in the last couple weeks when everybody kind of assumed it would be Seattle, and then they beat Seattle at home in the game that turned the West on its head. And they get into this playoff game, and you knew they were dangerous, and you knew Portland wasn't as strong a favorite as DC. I think it's reasonable to say they were the favorite.
Yeah.
But boy, Vancouver, those guys do not quit, and particularly Morgan Hibbert. And you tweeted out an unbelievable stat after the game that I didn't notice. And we were watching the game actually in the bar after the DC game. We went and we put the game up on the TVs in the bar. It was really cool. Everybody, the whole DC team and all the fans that had come to the bar watching it with us on the TV. And just Morgan Hibbert played, was it 21 of 27 points, right, in this game? That's incredible. That is a guy who says, "No, we're not losing." It's the same thing Alan Kolick did, except Alan Kolick did it with a little fewer points played. But Morgan, just, that's an incredible performance from him. A sick D on Timmy Person, who did play but was largely ineffective, I would say.
What's interesting is when we've looked at the West the entire year, it's been kind of a fickle matter in terms of defense. Because it didn't seem like a lot of teams were playing.
Except Morgan.
Except Morgan and Topher Davis. Yeah. So it was kind of something interesting to watch. But one thing across the league, but especially in this game, the matchups worked out incredibly well to kind of give us a different script than that first game of the season when they were scoring all over the place.
This was very different from that. This was I would say the nerves got to both DC and Boston, and they both teams overcame that and played about the way that you would expect those teams to match up. This was completely different. These teams, I think the nerves carried over through the whole game, at least until that fourth quarter. I mean, Portland didn't score in the first, but Vancouver only scored three.
Right, and the crazy thing is, in terms of defense, you know, Davis had statistically a better game than Morgan.
Morgan's team won.
But Morgan's team won, but the interesting thing to walk away from is, you know, Wong, for the season, incredible numbers. In this game, just 3 points. And it was that type of game across the board. Friedman didn't have a big day. Nobody on the Stags had a big day.
Very, very key drop.
Key drop.
But they did end up scoring that point. That could have come back to haunt them more. Let's move to the key mistake. Give the Topher Davis stat first, and then let's move to the key mistake in this game.
So Topher was on the field all the time, too, the same way that Morgan was. He played 19 points. He played 14 D points, and he ended as a plus 5 for the night, which is...
It's absurd.
Which is incredible.
It's absurd. Much the way Tim Howard stood on his head for the U.S. men's national team against Belgium, right. Topher Davis stood on his head for Portland, and they came up a little short.
And in the same way that there were a few key mistakes... For, you know, the U.S. against Belgium. You know, Breeze Trout.
Yeah, this play makes me scratch my head, John. There's 36 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah.
You got to score. You have to. This is not to go ahead. This is not the same situation D.C. was in where they can go ahead. It's tied and they need to go ahead. This was different. This was 36 seconds left. You need a goal to tie the game. And Breeze winds up and throws... a shot to no one. I think it might have been to Friedman.
Friedman was the closest guy.
You look at it, there's no way that was a good read. You look at where Eli Friedman's mark was when the disc hit the turf. He's like a yard, maybe 2 yards behind him. He was not open enough to warrant that shot with 36 seconds left. And the brilliant thing I think Vancouver did, they study game tape. They've played these guys a million times. They know that Breeze has itchy trigger finger. He has a tendency to throw the disc deep, which comes back to bite him in the butt sometimes.
Yeah.
And here it did. And if you watch the play, nobody was guarding him, and I think that was intentional. I think that they took a guy off of him to make that shot more enticing. And he took the shot, and he fell. Literally right into their trap, if that's what they were doing defensively, which I think it is.
I think that you're absolutely right. Because with 30 seconds left and them needing to score, there's a pressure. 30 seconds is a long time, but you don't think it is.
Right.
So if you drop a guy off of someone who has the tendency to put it when he maybe shouldn't, you know, that field gets a lot... The holes get a lot smaller. The windows.
Also, where do you think that guy is? He's probably sitting deep.
Exactly.
Or poaching a lane or doing something to make that throw more... to help his defense D that throw.
Because what you want in that situation is to get those unders. To eat those unders.
Which is what they've done all year.
Right.
And Vancouver, I got to give them a lot of credit. They did things defensively that took them out of their system, which led to the struggle for Portland offensively.
Yeah, Vancouver played defensively a very strong game.
I would think this was probably the strongest defensive game played in the West this year.
I'd agree with that.
And also one of the weaker offensive games. I mean, this was a messy game offensively. There were a lot of unforced errors, a lot of throws into places. There's not really a reason to throw.
You were just waiting, like, you know, I was sitting at home, you know, watching, you know, the whole night just watching both games, and in the same way that with, you know, DC against Boston, I'm just waiting for Colic to take over, or, you know, had it been, you know, different script, you know, Graham or Malachek.
Exactly, the big names.
To do something huge. I was waiting in the same way for Portland to have one of these offensive guys step in.
I really thought it would be Purston when I saw he was playing, but he did not have a great night. I mean,
but that was
he hasn't played in a long, long time, and he's getting guarded by largely Morgan Hibbert, I think, was his mark. And you know, he hasn't played in a while. There's no telling what kind of shape he's in, but disappointing performance from Timmy Purston, I think.
I'm not as down on person because of having Hibbert on him, but that should open up someone else to have a big day.
Friedman was not good in this game.
No.
Bjorklund was not really impactful. Norden was good, I thought. But one guy is not enough. And it, they played well enough to stay in the game, and they made a remarkable run to even get back in it after the first quarter. I mean, they tied the game at 4 when they were down 4-0. That's right. A great run.
It could have been over.
The bad start killed them in the end, because they outplayed Vancouver the rest of the game by 4 points. They beat them by 4 after the first quarter. Actually, 3, because it was 3-0, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
They played the better last 3 quarters, but we see this with Philly. You can't take a quarter off.
Especially not the first quarter.
Then you can't dig yourself a hole.
Right, and then you burn out, too. You know, energy-wise, it's tough to keep on trucking in the same way.
It is tough to come back from that.
So, you know, I think Hibbert's the big key that we should be looking at heading into the championship, because he's clearly the leader, the motivator, and, you know, the guy who turns that engine on.
Yeah. Also, I want to give a shout out to Chris Cannon for his call in Vancouver or in Portland. I thought he was excellent on color.
Yeah. I really enjoyed
his insights into the Vancouver team were excellent. And I like the way he played off of Brad Stein, who's really followed the Portland team around a lot of this year, and it was interesting having two home announcers.
It was
together. Each had insights on the separate teams. I thought it was a nice pairing. I thought they called a good game.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. It was overall that game not as pretty per se as Boston DC. You know, the stakes didn't feel quite as high for whatever reason, but I think it was still an enjoyable tight contest.
Oh yeah, enjoyable game. And now we have our finals matchup. And I will say this: I don't want to get too much into championship preview mode, but I do think out of all the teams in the West, Vancouver is the most equipped to play against an East Coast team.
Yeah.
I think if Portland had won, and I also, for the record, think that Portland had a better team this year than Vancouver. I think if Portland would have won, I'd be picking DC by maybe 10, because I don't think they're equipped at all to play against DC.
It's kind of the Philly syndrome in a lot of ways. With Portland, it's just so many throws.
Yeah.
Where you kind of get into trouble. Whereas Vancouver's offense is high-powered enough.
Yeah. And look, on defense, they have a lot of huge dudes. They have a lot of huge players. Right. And DC has big guys. DC has athletic guys. DC has small guys that play huge, like Dorico Johnson and Dom Gibson. It's going to be a fun matchup. That I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to leave it for sure. So we have a nice little contest to announce leading up to the championship, Greg.
Yeah, a little two-part contest, and the first part is fun for me and fun for the players. The second part, fun for the fans and listeners. So the first part is based on the result of the championship game, I will be purchasing an authentic Puma MLU jersey, and the jersey will be of the winning team, and will be either Morgan Hibbert, if Vancouver is to win, and if DC wins, it'll be Alan Kolick. And I will buy that jersey, and I will wear it for the first recording/broadcast of next year, depending on if we decide to do some video things. You might be able to see it, but there'll be definitely pictures and all the fun stuff, and I will wear it for the recording of the show, however we decide to record next year, for the first broadcast of next season.
Right. So that's the first part, which is fun.
That's the first part, which is fun. So that's actually what they're really playing for in the championship. That's the real motivation to try to win for Morgan and Allen. So I will buy their jersey. The second part is, this is for you fans out there. We will be having a trivia question next week on the show that we'll read on the show. And you will tweet at us the answer to that trivia question. If you get it right, you'll be entered to win that same jersey. Paid for by the John and Greg Show, which means paid for by John and Greg. And we'll get your size information, we'll get it sent out to you, and it will be the same jersey that I get. So if Vancouver wins, we're giving away a Morgan Hibbert jersey. If DC wins, we're giving away an Alan Kolick jersey.
Which is a win-win for fans.
Yeah, this is the first ever in MOU Podcasts, I think, doing a giveaway contest.
Yeah, so this is, you know, to get excited about the championship and get some energy going.
Yeah, and it will be the you'll have a better chance to win the faster you answer the question correctly. So if you answer it correctly on the first day that the show is posted, you will have more bids, or essentially more ping pong balls. I don't think we're going to use ping pong balls, but to do the NBA lottery version, we're going to throw more ping. You'll have more ping pong balls for yourself if you answer the question the first day, less on the second day, third day, fourth day. It'll go down and down until it becomes just one. And so you definitely want to get your answers in quickly if you want that jersey. And we will announce the winner shortly after the contest is completed.
Yeah, so we'll, you know, have you guys listen in next week to that trivia question, and then we'll get that contest going. It should be fun.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it.
MOU players, you are not eligible for this contest. You have your own jerseys. I'm not buying you an extra jersey.
Right.
And no, please don't spoil the answer to the trivia question to the listeners. And it should probably be a direct message instead of a tweet, right? So they don't give away the answer. Or no, they could tweet. Because there's no way to know if it's right or not until we announce that.
Right.
So yeah, tweet. Tweet at us.
Yeah.
@JohnandGregMLU.
It'll be a good question.
I'm excited for this contest. And I'm excited to get my first MLU Puma jersey. I don't have one right now. We took some of the test jerseys that they printed all the logos on out last night for a men's league. Running around with these ridiculous looking jerseys with all these, I think my jersey had every team's logo on it somewhere.
That's impressive.
Just to test the embroidery when they were doing all that stuff in the preseason. That's a pretty cool jersey. I should show it to you sometime. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that. And now let's give the players some love.
Yeah, this is awards time. This is where if you are a player listening, you will be receiving something. You are eligible for these awards. You are eligible for this contest. So John and I picked these awards today before the show. Luckily, we agreed on almost all of them.
Yeah.
And we're giving away 8 awards, John, yeah?
Yes.
And it's let's read them off for the listeners.
So we have, for each conference, we'll have MVPs, we'll have the Rookie of the Year in each conference, as well as Defensive Player of the Year in each conference.
And we'll be doing one League Coach of the Year for this season. Coaching staff of the year, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe giving away the award right there by specifying that, but
potentially
it's what we've got, like, what, 10 minutes and we reveal it anyway. So right. If you can figure it out already, you can skip ahead or whatever.
But then also we'll be giving away
this is one I'm excited for.
Yeah, this is a good idea that we had today. We'll give out the Guest of the Year award.
Yeah, this is for our favorite guest appearance this year. Not for one single appearance, if the winner appeared multiple times on the show, but our favorite guest of the year on the John and Greg Show.
Yeah, so let's get right into it.
Let's give out some awards.
With the East MVP, this one's probably...
This is the easiest one. There's no debate among anybody in this office or in this league. There should be no debate among anyone who the winner of this award is.
Yeah, so, you know, Alan Kolick has come up big in so many ways. The number, you know, I was pulling numbers for him, 30 goals, 14 assists. He had 22 throwaways the entire year, despite throwing it 392 times, which is incredible. The number that I love for Allen, though, is the 6 Ds that he had over the course of the year, because those Ds came at big times, and they're such intelligent plays.
Yeah.
He's such a great intellectual player.
For me this year, Alan Kolick won the MVP award not by numbers, not by flash, not even by sheer dominance, just by doing all those things when it counted, and really being the key reason that that team took the huge step forward this year that they did, at least player-wise. I know Kevin Moldenhauer deserves a ton of credit for the steps that they've taken, and Will Spolinski also. Great coaching staff in D.C., they did a great job, but they did what they did because they have a player like Alan Kolick who had an unbelievable season. The best season that we've seen so far of anybody in 2 years. I think that's safe to say. If we were giving out one MVP for the league, I think we would still be having the same conversation.
Yeah.
That he ran away with it this year. Absolutely ran away with it.
Yeah, the thing about, you know, we were talking about how Kolek and Schaffner work off one another. The reason why there isn't such a pairing that works so well together is because there aren't many players like Alan Kolek. There is no one like Alan Kolek.
No, the closest approximation would be Nick Hironet, and he doesn't have the size or the really the creative throws. Is that the word I'm looking for? The kind of crazier, over-the-top stuff that Alan has. Alan has every throw in the book. Nick Hironet, great player. He's certainly a guy who deserves a little bit of consideration for this award. Not second place or, you know, I think he had a season worthy of mention.
For sure.
And he's the most similar player to Alan in the league. He's just, Alan's on a different level.
Yeah.
Alan's on a different level from everybody right now. There's nothing to take away from Nick Hironet. He had a fantastic season. He's a fantastic player. And that team is going to rely on him big time next year as they look to take their next step moving forward. But Alan, just head and shoulders above everybody else this year, I think.
I think you hit it. You hit the nail on the head when, you know, you're essentially talking about, you know, coming through in the clutch. And, you know, we're not statistically at the level yet where we're talking about what exactly clutch means. But if you watch a game, you know what it means to take one over. And Alan did it so many times.
Whenever they needed a play, he was there to make it. And he never made a crucial mistake that cost them a game. I mean, they only lost one game, but he was always the reason they were winning. Always.
And, you know, we're talking about how he's had the best season of anyone in the 2 years that this league's been around. We need to remember that DC really killed some teams. They destroyed some teams. So the amount of points that Alan had to play are, you know, his stats would be even greater if he was on a team that wasn't routing everyone else in the East.
Agreed.
You know, in a big way. So, I think that he, getting to the championship for that team, you know, it's kind of this is going to be the coming out party for Alan. This is going to be him showcasing his skills, you know, on the highest possible level. And I think it's going to be fun to see.
I'm anxious to see who from Vancouver thinks they can guard him. I'm expecting to see Peter Yu on him, but
young, quick player.
Capable of making plays. Just want to see what they try to do to him. I want to see if Lugsden comes up with anything to try to contain Allen. I know Anthony Nunez is very proud of his double team. Maybe Lugsden will take a look at that and they'll try something like that. But just being a player, you have to game plan for like that. It helps the rest of your team, because now, you know, if Vancouver's focusing on Allen, they're not worrying about guys like Wodach and Pryle and Eddie Peters, too, who had a fantastic year.
Yeah.
I love the way Eddie Peters plays. I think he's a great, great piece of that team, and we've said that multiple times. But he's, you know, that's just another way that Alan helps you, right? Taking the focus off of other players.
You know, we talked about how last weekend a lot of the big names got shut down, but all those guys, you know, Wong, Pryle, Friedman, who goes between Handler and Cutter, you know, and then Graham as well. All those guys are not traditional handlers. They're not in that handler set all the time. Kolek, 7 points, just a ho-hum day. It's really hard to shut him down.
He's an absolute game changer out of the handler position. He's so dangerous anywhere in the field. Just awesome season. Now, let's move to the Western Conference MVP.
Yeah, so, you know, midway through the year, and even, you know, 75% of the way through the year, this was a question, because, you know, Portland was rearing on all cylinders and Vancouver wasn't, you know, quite there yet, and Seattle was still hanging around. But, you know, after the Nighthawks went on this run to make it to the championship game and even to make it to the playoffs, Brendan Wong became the clear cut choice in this case.
And he is our Western Conference MVP for 2014. his numbers before they made the run, when he had those numbers on a team that looked like they were about to spiral into another 3-7 season, it was, you know, kind of just numbers. Like, oh, great year, statistically fantastic, but just kind of cleaning up the scraps on a bad team.
Right.
Then they went on the run, and his numbers became very meaningful because now he's the guy who scored 68 points. 68, is it?
60, doing math quickly, 66.
66 points. He's the guy who scored 66 points and pushed his team into the championship and into the playoff picture. And I don't think either of us took into account the playoff game and the result of that in our choice here. I think we stuck with the regular season. But his performance pushed them into the playoffs. Offensively, he carried that offense. Just an incredible season. And it was going to be Eli Friedman for, as you said, about 75% of the year.
Yep.
And then, you know, Eli kind of fell off a little bit. Portland was still playing well, but, you know, it wasn't as much about Friedman.
Which can hurt an MVP campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think his case was that the team had gotten so much better, and he was kind of the key to their offense, much in the way that Allen is the key to the DC offense. He wasn't really the key cog that Kolek was down the stretch for Portland, but Wong was. Wong was the key player on offense, whereas Morgan Hibbert was the key player on defense for a team that made a really nice run and got themselves into the playoffs.
Yeah, so clarification on points. 64 for the regular season, 67 by the, you know, including the playoff game.
My a lot of points.
But a lot.
I think that's a lot. He has almost 20 more points than the next closest guy.
Yeah, the next closest guy at 47, that was Graham. Which is just insane.
Yeah, just an incredible year.
And the thing about Wong is, I've told this story a few times, and I've been backed up by, you know, Vancouver's content manager, you know, out there, Scott Lewis, who, you know, he's said on numerous occasions that, you know, Brennan is putting up big numbers, but he really is just about having this team win games.
And that's, you know, that helps when you make ridiculous grabs and come down with everything. And he's had an unbelievable year, and congratulations to Brendan for winning the John and Greg Show MVP of the Western Conference.
Yeah, love it. So let's move back to the East for our East Rookie of the Year.
This was a fun one for me, John. I really enjoyed watching this guy play.
This is one where we might get some flack because, you know, our choice did not play every game of the season, but what we saw from him in the games that he did play blew us away.
And it was a lot about the impact that he had for his team.
So instantly.
Yeah, really turning them from a team whose season looked to be over into a team that really pushed for the playoffs. And our Eastern Conference Rookie of the Year is Marcus Raynaud-Dropcho.
So we had, you know, Marcus on leading into his first professional game, and, you know, he said all the right things, and then he went on the field and he proved it. So he put up 20 points in 4 contests, which, you know, after we get done talking about, you know, Brendan Wong, it doesn't seem that fantastic. But if you go through an entire season with those numbers, he ends the year with 50
points. Which is more than anybody else in the league had, other than Wong.
Right.
He would have led the Eastern Conference at that clip. And that's incredible for a rookie. And also, before we continue with this, I want to clarify again, our Rookie of the Year criteria is different than the league's Rookie of the Year criteria.
Right.
We looked at primarily young players who are just out of college or recently out of college, and this is their first year of competition. So Marcus fits that bill. Also, guys in college would qualify for this too. Marcus fits that bill. Guys like Brendan Wong do not fit that description, which is why a guy who scores 64 points is not our Western Conference rookie.
Right. Yeah, which is an important thing to note. But the thing about, you know, Marcus is he came in and at a time where, you know, Jake Rainwater missed a few games down the stretch, and, you know, Raynaud-Dropcho really, he almost lifted this team into the playoffs. Against Boston, absolutely, he had a big day, him and David Randolph. And then that last game, him and Pat Earls with that connection from college, all day long, he was deep.
Oh, yeah. Their connection was incredible. And I think if Earls had played if he had started as well as he finished, he would also be, we'd be talking about him for this award too. But Marcus played very well throughout. I think he only had 3 points in his first game, but from then on, he was in the plus five range. I think he was over five in all those games, except for the first game, or at least over four. He had a lot of points. He was definitely a key scorer for them in that run that they made. And had they made the playoffs, wow. I mean, that would have been just the cherry on top for him and for that team. And we really just hope to see him re-sign and come back next year and see what he can do with a whole year.
Yeah, looking at his completion numbers compared to Wong's, you know, through 59 throws, he only threw the disc away three times. Marcus did, which is impressive. So over the course of a season, if he was to throw it about 150 times, his turnover rate would have been less than Wong's. I think that goes with Billy Maroon's comparison of how Marcus is like another Jake Rainwater. His ability to throw is so important. Yes.
And I was really impressed with his little lefty flip throws, too. I like those. I'm always a fan of guys who can throw with both hands.
Yeah, he was just fun to watch overall, I think. And so
he is the first award recipient who we will not be giving the award to in person.
Right.
Which is weird because he plays for Philly and we're in Philly, but he lives in Pittsburgh. So I don't anticipate seeing him in person before next season. So.
But if you're coming to the championship game, Marcus,
let us know so we don't put this award in the mail. We'll see you there. Right. We should probably get an email out to these award winners to find out if they're going to be at the championship. but we know Brendan and Alan will be there, and they'll receive their awards in person. Let's see if we can get a little Brian Caniff picture.
Yeah.
With giving the award. Now we move to the West. This is another player that we will not be seeing at the championship game.
Right. So, you know, we've talked about him a lot. He might be like my favorite young player overall, watching him from, you know, game one to game 10. You know, Topher Davis just had a phenomenal year, and he's our Western Conference Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, nobody else out there really had the kind of year that he had, at least I don't think. Obviously, Wong is a rookie by league criteria, but not for us in this criteria. I don't see another young player who had the type of year that Topher did, who had the type of impact that Topher did. I mean, you can talk about Khalif Al-Salam is not a rookie. Khalif Al-Salam played last year, or else he would be very high on my list for this award. Henry Fan had a great year for Seattle, but Jagan Chatha had an outstanding year.
He was only 20.
Did not realize how young he was. He would be a good candidate for this award, but Topher Davis had, the biggest impact from, you know, day one on leading that defense.
Gagan Chatha
played kind of second fiddle to Brendan Wong, and he was great at it, but Topher Davis was their guy on defense. He was their number one defensive player. Had an outstanding year, and we talked about his playoff game where he really stood in his head for that team, and just a great year from a young guy. And again, I hope to see him back with the team next year, and, you know, they can make another run at it.
Yeah, for sure. So 19 points on the year, 14 Ds, only 9 throwaways. Those are good numbers from, you know, from a defensive player who is not only getting you Ds, but then is also leading you down the field to turn those Ds into points.
Yeah, just really fun to watch this year. Awesome, awesome year. And congratulations, Topher. You'll be receiving your award in the mail.
Yeah. So let's move to our Eastern Defensive Player of the Year. Probably the toughest award.
This was the one that we had to think about a little bit, because nobody really stands out as the clear-cut choice. A lot of these other guys, you know, you could make some cases for other rookies in the West. Maybe I think you should still land on Topher Davis, but this was one where nobody really stood out as the obvious choice.
Yeah, so we ended up giving our award to a Boston player, Rusty Engoldsmith.
Yes. I just love the way that he plays on defense. I think he's very, very useful to them defensively. What he can do as a handler defender, what he can do then on the turn as kind of the Topher Davis of that defense. You know, they had a bad defense this year, but he was kind of the shining light of that defense, the one guy who had a really good year. And I have no problem giving him this award. I think he's earned it. I think he deserves it. I think he's a good enough player that even though the numbers aren't there, you watch the tape and you say, okay, now I see why they gave him this award. He's probably the best handler defender in the East.
I think that's definitely fair to say.
Big, long guy. Pairs well with Miles Montgomery Butler, who also had a strong season as a handler defender. But Rusty Engoldsmith, you have won the Eastern Conference Defensive Player of the Year.
So, you know, Rusty, a lot of the Boston guys, you know, the leading player for points played on D for Boston was John Hershberger with 108. Rusty played 92 D points, and he got a D in 9 of them. He had 9 Ds on the season. So 1 out of every 10 points that you play, essentially, you get a D. Not too bad.
Yeah, and we've heard a lot of people campaign for Jack Hatchett for Defensive Player of the Year. I didn't like his year. I know he had, 17, 18 Ds this year, but I think he's liable for a lot more, you know, goals than he got Ds. And yes, Ds are very valuable, but we saw what Patrick Devinney did to him. He tore him apart twice.
Part of getting Ds is people throwing at you.
Yeah, and the way that Jack plays is very... It's an interesting style because he wants to get those Ds. He wants to bait throws, but a lot of times when you bait throws on good players and really good throwers that we have in the Eastern Conference, you get beat. So I don't know if that's exactly the style of play that we're looking for from our Defensive Player of the Year. So we went with a little more consistent style with our Eastern Conference Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, Rusty just shuts people down. I remember the first time that, you know, I was fully, wholeheartedly aware of him was that week one game against New York, where
Chris Mazur a non-factor.
Yeah, an absolute non-factor. And from there on out, any game that he attended, he was shutting somebody down almost entirely. So yeah, it was fun to watch.
Yeah, great player. I remember when they absolutely dismantled New York, he had just a very, very strong game. The defense was on the field the whole time, but he really played well in that game, and I think also when Philadelphia went up there, he played very, very well to secure what could have been a tighter game, but ended up being a blowout, as a lot of games in Boston wound up being this year.
So the difference between our Eastern Defensive Player of the Year, you know, Rusty, he would essentially split time with Miles Montgomery Butler in a few games. Like, they would have essentially the same assignment. That's why their points played isn't super high.
They would take the task of guarding the handlers.
Right. So, out west, you know, we saw it last weekend. You know, our award winner out west would not shy away for even a second unless he absolutely needed to come off of the field.
And Morgan Hibbert, the winner of this award, does get beat occasionally.
Yeah.
But in a different way than Jack Hatchett, he gets up and cleans up the skies for this team. And he's their emotional leader on defense. He's the emotional leader of their whole team. He's the best defender in the league. I think that's easy to say. And he's the easy choice out west.
He definitely is. So a reason why giving this award makes sense. So Dan Tretiak, who had a really great season, 40-plus points for Seattle, and kind of became a big player in their offense as a handler. Morgan would take that assignment pretty often. He would split time between him and covering, you know, Donnie Clark downfield. So Dan had this to say on Facebook to Morgan. He said, "Morgan, you made my life terrible on offense, but you're one of the funnest matchups I could ask for, and you stopped me often doing what I did best." For a guy who had a good season, that means a lot.
Yeah. And here's the thing about Morgan. You might beat him a couple times, but nobody wins their matchup against Morgan Hibbert. That doesn't happen. You get him a couple times. I mean, Mark Burton got him a few times, but Morgan will get you just about the same amount. And we saw that as the season went on, that, you know, that first week battle between Mark Burton and Morgan Hibbert was really fun to watch because they each got each other a couple of times.
Right.
But nobody goes out and burns Morgan Hibbert. Nobody goes out and makes him look silly. Doesn't happen.
And, you know, Morgan, we talked about how, you know, Hatchet, he's kind of that hit or miss style to go get those Ds. Morgan, he gives you the full table of what you want as a defensive player. You know, not only does he lock people down, but he also goes, he had at least two huge highlight reel Ds over the course of the season. So he brings both to the table for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, he's incredible player. Incredible defensive player. And the 21 of 27 points thing, that's remarkable. And those were long points, a lot of those points.
But it doesn't surprise me.
No, not if you hear him talk about his team and talk about how much getting to a championship means to him. And I'm not going to be surprised one bit if he has the game of his life in this championship game.
And I'll tell you, you know, not to pat Alan Kolick on the back again, but, you know, if they needed him to play a ton of points on D too, I'm sure that he'd be like, oh, okay. And he'd be happy to go do it, and he would do it well.
Those
guys are going to be the keys in this championship game, so it should be fun to watch.
And this award we will be giving out in person. And I think we're both very, very excited to finally meet Morgan in person, not just on our little Skype computer screen here in the studio. And he's bringing us the big head.
It's going to be great.
That'll be our first, you know, Mike and Mike and all those shows on ESPN, they all have their little collection of sports memorabilia. This is our first, that'll be our first little piece, the Morgan Hibbert big head. I'm also excited. Did you see the tweet? He's bringing the, he said, I bring them the big head, but I'm also bringing them the regular size head or something like that. Bringing the real thing, slightly smaller size. That was what he said. I love that. I love that tweet.
Yeah, it should be fun. Vancouver's had a really great year, and the two guys who are taking home awards from Vancouver today are the big reasons why.
Yeah, very deserving award winners. And now we move on to our last two awards, John. Let's start with Coach of the Year.
Yes.
I think this one is also very easy.
I think, you know, you said that you gave it away a little bit. I wouldn't say exactly, because I think this could have also been DC.
Yes.
But it's not.
They were really the only two choices.
Yeah. So Portland last year struggled mostly because they did not have a system that... No, sorry. They just didn't have a system. There's no additional thing needed to, on the end of
Yeah, there was no system. They were not a well-coached team. And this year you saw what happened when they became a well-coached team. And that's why Danny Quarle and Michael Knapp, you will be receiving one award, not two. Sorry, you have to share it.
Yeah.
There's a budget for this. So they'll be getting the award. And well-deserved. For instilling the system that really shocked everybody in the league. Nobody saw Portland being any good this year, and they finished first in the West, got a home playoff game, and got really close to getting into the championship.
And I think...
Without Timmy Perston, by the way, for most of the year. Right. All but two games.
And I think that if what their job says to me about this league is, you know, Billy Maroon in Philly, he should pick his head up. Because, you know, system-wise, if you get that system in place and you have everyone believe in it, and that's kind of what Billy's been trying to get happen in Philly.
Billy Maroon recognized the great season he had with everything going on in among team chemistry and bringing in five new players towards the end of the year. Just that guy, he deserves recognition for what he did. Not a Coach of the Year candidate, not a serious Coach of the Year candidate, because his team did finish outside the playoffs, and with the years that Portland and DC had,
right.
Either would have been a good choice, but I think Portland is the clear-cut choice, because we expected DC to be better this year. We expected them to improve and be involved in the playoff picture, and we didn't even expect Portland to really challenge for a playoff spot. I know you picked them to get into the playoffs, but you really picked them to sneak in and by default, almost by weakness of the rest of the conference. But they turned around and just became a great team. And I can't wait to see what happens next year, because you know the bottom half of the West is not going to sit back. They're going to go and get, they're going to get their players. They're going to get, you know, they're going to figure things out, and they're not going to be, I'd be very surprised if San Francisco was as bad as they were this year, next year.
Right.
And I think Seattle will also improve. So we talked about the conference coming back, the conference
coming
the,
back
the front of the Earth. Conference coming back to Earth. Now we're talking about the back of the conference probably going to take push. Take a push up. Exciting off-season stuff. That's for much later on. But Danny Quarle and Michael Knapp, winners of Coach of the Year.
Yeah, I was fully certain of this award the second that Bree Stroud threw that throw on Saturday. Because if you just trusted the system, you would probably be coming.
Yeah, we heard Raffy Hayes talk about it when we had him on the show, that the game that they lost because they didn't play their game. They got caught up in other they lost the system. And the system was key all year for them, playing within the system, playing within structure. We heard even Morgan Hibbert talk about it when he came on the show the first time, that they looked completely different because right. they were playing a controlled style. And when they got out of that system, when they started to take shots that they weren't used to taking, they got themselves in trouble. And now they're sitting at home watching the championship.
Yeah, so speaking of a few guests that we've had on the show, let's move to our last award as we wind.
This is a great award.
Yeah, as we wind, you know, the awards down.
He's our first repeat guest, and he's also our first repeat award winner.
Right, that's true. Yeah. So, you know, the interviews are our favorite part of doing this show.
Absolutely.
And so this last award goes out to the guest of the year. So our favorite person who we've had on the show. And no surprise, because we haven't had... It could have been Marcus, but we're giving it to Morgan Hibbert of Absolutely. The Vancouver Nighthawks.
Who will be the first three-peat guest also when we get around to talking about championship.
For sure. He's out playing this weekend. You know, playing Frisbee the way that guy is wont to do. He's
just likes Frisbee. Yeah. He's a Frisbee guy. He likes to play Frisbee.
But, you know, we're planning out that show for the preview of the championship already, and, you know, we will definitely have Morgan be a part of it for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And congratulations, Morgan, for winning the Favorite Guest of the Year award. I think Chris Mazur could have been a close second, too. Yeah, his interview at the beginning of the season was fantastic.
It was. It was awesome. Yeah. And, you know, bringing up Mazur, just want to give a little shout-out to all of New York for...
Tough season.
For a tough season, but what, you know, tells you about character is, you know, there's a scene in Friday Night Lights where Coach Taylor says, you know, that's what character is. It's in the trying. And you can never fault Chris Mazur or a good number of guys on that team for not trying.
It just never came together for him.
Right. So
lots of talent, lots of potential, derailed by a lot of injuries, inconsistent styles. I think that team has a nice future, but this was a really, really disappointing year for them. And I know they're looking to bounce back, but you got to change some stuff. You got to change the way that they're playing, because whatever style that was, there was no consistency to what they were doing. They'd try to play deep some weeks, they'd try to play small ball some weeks, and it, the first thing they had to fix is drops. Were again there's so many unforced errors, so many drops this year, so many silly turnovers. They just need to get better and more consistent.
For sure. And you know, Morgan was a big part of bringing the Nighthawks together and getting to that point.
You know, we've seen teams now this year completely flip the script on their previous season without too much of a roster shakeup. So
it could happen.
It's there. It's there, New York. You're going to have a long off season to think about it, and you know, just try to be better next year.
Yeah.
Maybe not make me look so bad.
Right.
I was very high on this team in the preseason, and I take flack for it a lot that they were so they had such a poor season. But I still believe in the future in New York. Still believe in Chris Mazur. Still believe in, you know, Joe Smash, all those. The core of that team is good. And a lot of the pieces they added this year are good.
Yeah.
They need to find a way to make it work.
For sure. So with that, let's...
So we were talking about New York on the championship preview show, the post-playoffs show.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that it was important. But, you know, with that, let's bring this show, you know, home for a week until, you know, as we get a week closer to...
Get ready for the trivia contest.
Yeah,
MLU let's get Jersey excited Challenge.
It should be fun. I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing how many fans, you know, answer what should be a tough question.
Yeah, yeah, we got to come up with a question first. And no heads and tails this week. I know Luke and Tim have some good stuff cooking upstairs. They're working real hard on some new stats, so they really didn't have much of a segment for us prepared this week. So they took the week off from that to focus on coming up with some really cool stats. I've seen a little bit of what they're doing. It's going to be really interesting stuff. So keep your eyes peeled for some cool stuff coming from those guys, and we'll be sure to get them back on the show next week when we're doing all-league teams, John.
Yeah.
All-league teams will not receive a plaque. They will receive a certificate.
Yes.
Because we might do two teams. We might do a first and second team, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe we could try that. And paper's a lot cheaper.
Yes.
And with the jersey contest and all these plaques for player awards, and my car just broke down.
The
Penny Packer pick of the week was that I would get a car by July 8th, did he say? That
yeah, which
would
was
last longer than the car that I just totaled.
Which lasted...
Now, let's be clear. Totaled can be a difficult word because it sometimes means that you wrecked your car.
He didn't crash it into the studio.
I overheated my car and the engine melted. So your engine parts melted to the point where it's not feasibly fixable. Buying a new engine would cost as much as buying a new car. At least this, it would be like buying this car again. So I might as well just buy another car. Maybe a bike since I live in the city.
Maybe.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
Enough of my personal problems on the John and Greg show.
Yeah, but.
But thanks, Dave, for putting all that out there that my car broke down.
That it'll last two times as long. So
actually,
you need it,
funny
for like
it broke down on the way to DC to the game.
Uh-huh.
And Jeff Snyder and the army of people with him had to. Get a big van and pick us up on their way down to the game. So that was kind of an interesting story. And then I got dropped back off at the car on the way back to wait for the tow truck, which I could tell you about another time. But the truck driver had actually seen MLU games before. So,
oh.
That was cool. I talked to him on the way back because I needed to ride home. And yeah, he had seen us on TV.
That's nice.
So, I mean, he had no idea that we do this show, which is, you know, you should probably listen to the show. Everybody should listen to the show.
Yeah.
But just a fun little side note to the car breaking down story.
Yeah. So, you know, with that, that's the show for this week. Get excited about the contest and all league teams next week. To everyone who won an award, congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Want to take us out?
Yeah. So for everyone here at the MLU offices, it's a fun day today before it rains. I'm John Phillips.
I'm Greg Fallon. Thanks for listening.